Hey, everybody. Welcome to the FN Studios. This is Five Rounds Today. I am John Ramdean alongside my good buddy, Robin Black. Man, it's a loaded show today, people. We are joined by longtime mixed martial arts reporter Josh Gross, one of the best in the business, as well as one of the best in the mixed martial arts stratosphere. He is the UFC 125-pound champion, Demetrius Mighty Mouse Johnson. Man, what a great show we have. We're talking about kind of everything in the world of MMA. You know, we've had, over the last couple of weeks, we've talked some smack about the mixed martial arts media.
They deserve it.
And they do deserve it, but there's sometimes, we're passionate. Yeah. We get excited about things, and one of the reasons why is because we want people to love these martial artists. We want people to see the actual beauty in combat, and for people to understand that, you know, if I guess you can compare it to football, because the goal for a quarterback is to make sure touchdowns happen and people run and there's yards gained.
I don't know what you're saying.
Sure. I don't know. But there are times when a quarterback gets smoked and he still has to perform. And that's one of the things I want, you know, people to understand about martial artists like Demetrius Johnson. You get punched in the head, and I know they're in the business of getting punched in the head, but you can't react the same that you did before you got punched in the head. And for guys to be able to fight for 20 extra minutes after getting hurt in a single round and go into cruise control, survival mode, and trying to inflict damage and go on the offensive, We really hope that the fans understand that part.
Yeah, and I think we have a weird, and we've talked about it, it's somewhere between passion and like unhealthy evangelical love of fighting. And that's great. It allows us to go deeper and deeper. You know, we do, a lot of people that cover fighting are like, I don't want to know these guys. We need to know these guys. Mm-hmm. We need to get the opportunity for them to pick,
and
for
their
us
mindset.
To pick their brains, get their mindset, see how they do things. But I know we have a different take on it, and we'll talk to Josh about it when he comes on, because he's, I think, the top of the heap, been around the longest, the voice of reason in fight
and
media.
And he's not afraid to say stuff because, you know, quite frankly, he believes integrity is key. And integrity is
ethics.
Key. And ethics. And I know from our standpoint, we hype things up a lot. Yeah. Like, and of course, we don't overhype things. And I think we are critical when things need to be criticized. But at the same time, we're trying to get that balance.
Yeah.
But there are things that we just don't care about. We don't care about the who's, you know, not that we don't care about people beating their wives.
That's not the issue.
That story is not interesting to us because it doesn't relate to mixed martial arts. That's just a human side, and you hope that the athletes, whether they're from hockey or football or whatever, get their shit together and stop doing the things that they're doing. We're more interested in the martial arts aspect of fighting, and we're hoping that, you know, casual fans, because most people have never done martial arts, so they've never spent any time on the mat, we're hoping that we can steer them down a path so that they can spend time training Muay Thai or some jiu-jitsu and get a better appreciation, a better love, and it just, you become a happier person when you train martial arts.
Martial arts is good for everybody's lives. That's for damn sure. For whether you're a kid and you need, like, anything in life is accomplished in small steps, goals. What do I got to do to get my yellow belt?
Yep.
Oh, I learned that pattern. Oh, I accomplished something. Mm-hmm. Now I'll set a new one. I need a green belt. When you're a 12-year-old kid and you learn that, that is applicable to everything in life. And so martial arts are a wonderful thing for anybody to do. And we really believe martial arts has changed our lives. And so that's why we feel that way. And then on the other side, you know, all the gossipy Twitter beefs and all that kind of stuff. John Jones is the best fighter in the world. He's gone through some troubles. We haven't talked about him. Let him go sort that shit out.
Yeah.
Go sort that shit out. When you come back, what I'm going to be curious about, what kind of shape is he?
Yeah.
What can he do? How much better is he? Where's his mindset? How terrifying is it going to be when he first fights? And Demetrius Johnson is the best. And we got him coming up on the show. Yeah. That is so awesome. We're big fans. And he's a good dude. And we're working on having him come into Fight Network not too far in the distant future. And he is one of the great athletes in the world, trained by one of the great coaches in the world. And when you look at that, whether you're a little kid trying to get your yellow belt and then your green belt, that goes on forever in everything in life. And this guy's taking it to that highest level in human history.
Don't go anywhere. We have a loaded show here on Five Rounds Today. Don't change the channel. I promise you'll be very disappointed if you do. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. John Ramdean and Robin Black with you. We are now joined on the line by longtime mixed martial arts reporter Josh Gross. Josh, thanks so much for joining us. It's been a long time you've been covering this sport of mixed martial arts. Give us your take on the lay of the land and how things have changed since you started covering this incredible sport.
Boy, well, first, thanks for having me. You know, you can answer that question so many different ways. I've covered as a reporter for over 15 years now. When I jumped in, the sport really was an underground adventure. I mean, for the most part, people who were trying to make the sport legitimate were working through the regulators, through the athletic commissions to try to do that. There wasn't much of a promotional outlet. Television networks weren't knocking down anyone's door to put this on TV. You know, it really was down to the sport itself, the competitors, the athletes. They were the things that were driving this. They were the things that were maintaining people like mine's interest. And, you know, that hasn't changed. It still comes down to the fights and the fighters. But it's big business now, and certainly something that's grown exponentially over the last 15 years. And I expect that growth to continue, although I think there are a lot of hurdles and big business questions along the way that need to be answered.
Josh, thanks for chatting with me the other night, too. And Ramdean and I think a lot of people in the media, kind of see you as the voice of reason in fight coverage. And we were chatting about the idea, you know, Ramdean and I kind of get worked up about stuff.
A little.
You know, we got really worked up about things because we're passionate about it. And, you know, we pointed out the sort of overdoing of, you know, Twitter beefs and who hates who and all this drama and gossip and stuff and fighting. And we felt that that's, one, it takes away from the sport, and not many other sports really are as obsessed. And two, it's not how you really cover a sport, and it's not journalism. But you and I chatted the other day, and kind of what we do as analysts isn't really journalism either. What the hell is MMA journalism?
Oh, I think it encompasses a lot, just like journalism in any other field. And thanks again for the chat. Look, I always... I'm happy to chat with people that I talk about on Twitter. You know, it's like, Robin, I've had you on my podcast. I know you, and the opportunity to sort of engage more than 140 characters is really nice. So, MMA journalism, I do think, is something that exists. I think important stories have been broken. I think important topics have been touched. I think a lot of light has been shed over the years. I do think it's an important aspect of the sport. Now, of course, we're not talking about government or politics or public policy. We're talking about a sport, a combat sport, and one that's niche at that. You know, I do feel like sometimes people get lost in this bubble of MMA. It is a niche sport. It is, at the end of the day, people stepping in a cage and fighting one another primarily, and that's not going to be palatable to a large segment of the population. But it doesn't mean that that's above real sort of looks at things. You know, you're talking about, as I referenced in the opening, a sport that has morphed from an underground adventure to now something that's big business. Mm-hmm. You're talking about big money. You're talking about labor issues. You're talking about drug testing issues. These are real topics that deserve serious examination. Beyond that, look, my natural inclination is to dig. That's not everybody's, and that's fine. But there are really great reporters in the sport, people who ferret out stories, people who work sources, people who get information. I think there's a lot of good stuff. I think there's a lot of hokey stuff, too. But as I told you in our conversation, Robin, I wouldn't limit that to MMA. That's not just an MMA thing. There's really kind of terrible journalism all over the place, if you want to classify it that way. And I'm not sure that MMA is so different in that respect.
But, I mean, we all anticipate that the sport, as you mentioned, that the sport is going to continue to grow. You've been covering the sport, as you said, for a decade and a half. Did you anticipate that it would get onto network television in the U.S. and that they would have shows all over the world and the fan base would continue to grow? Because if that trend continues, this essentially could be a global sport. I mean, you know, the UFC, we're kind of in a bubble here in North America because people see mixed martial arts as the UFC. But, you know, there's shows being held in Africa. There's shows being held in the U.K. There's shows being held in Dubai. And if people get on the same page, I don't know if it's necessarily going to be a niche sport, because there are a lot of people that I've spoken to over my time covering the sport that they say, you know what, I just never was a fight fan until I discovered mixed martial arts and the beauty of combat. And I think more and more people, especially you look at some of these different cultures, fighting is a part of their culture. And I think once they get exposed to it, that the sport will continue to grow.
There will be room for growth because there have been pockets of the globe that haven't seen it yet, or at least in an organized form. And look, a niche is not so bad. A global niche is still a pretty valuable big thing. I mean, you can make a lot of money and create an industry that way. And I do think mixed martial arts has advantages over other sports in that it does transcend borders. It's not just a North American product like football. You know, this is something that people around the world, it's in our nature, it's in our DNA, and that, you know, Dana White has said that line for a long time. I think it's true.
It is true.
You look at what the Greeks were doing in ancient pancreation, that's basically what's going on today. This is part of what we do as human beings. It's how we test ourselves. Yes, but the bottom line is that it's still not going to be palatable to large segments of the population. And, I do believe a global niche is a valuable thing, an important thing. It'll continue to grow. But, you know, is this thing going to be soccer? I don't buy it. And I could be wrong. To your original question, when people said back 10 years ago, well, this thing's going to be on the front page of sports pages and, you know, you're going to have regular columnists, I was hesitant on that. I didn't see that because I was coming from a place where I'd seen, you know, the best fighters in the world fighting on baseball diamonds and Native American reservations at midnight because that's the only place that they could do it. And so, you know, I do feel like the sport has grown tremendously. There is still lots of room for growth. There's no question about it. You now have an environment where it's major media companies are involved. Companies like Viacom are involved getting behind the sport. And then you have, of course, what Zuff has done for so long, building their own brand and their own corporation. And they continue to do that. So, you know, I didn't necessarily see that this thing would be, you know, breaking news on SportsCenter every day. Certainly it's nice to see the sport get covered that way. I think it deserves the coverage. That's one of the things that I've said for a long time. In the right moments, it generally does. And I think that's a trend that we'll probably still continue to see.
And while we're talking about coverage, there's a million reasons why things grow as fans, the sport itself, fighters, global trends and coverage, media. And that's how you and I started talking about this. You know, John and I will get worked up and this tomato can media, they're all stupid. Yeah. And you quite rightly pointed out that when people get passionate, especially today, you see it from Donald Trump on down, people make grand sweeping statements. And if I say all media is stupid and all media does
we're
this,
wrong.
I don't get to say Chuck Mindenhall is a great writer. I like Ben Folks and Luke Thomas is somebody I enjoy. You don't get to say all of that stuff because you're so busy talking about this kind of sweeping kind of thing. But, you know, you see that I blame a lot of shit on bad coverage, that people don't understand the sport, that the sport itself is so rarely covered in comparison to Twitter beefs, that the hype is like that. And as a result, fans don't understand the sport. And when media is saying this fight was boring, football coverage do not say this football game was boring. They talk about the football game. And that's a judgment made by a media member that just likes professional wrestling or something. Do you see why we get frustrated on our end?
Sure, and I understand that. And as someone who stepped into the sport having trained, you know, I trained jiu-jitsu. I did lots of other forms of martial arts. There's no doubt that it absolutely influenced how I saw what I was watching when the professionals were doing it. I could understand positions because I felt those positions. I knew what they were going for. I appreciated the defense of the positions. Mm-hmm. As I had told you before, when I go and watch fighters work out, I'm watching their footwork. I'm watching the little nuances only because I have that foundation. I would recommend anybody who's stepping into the fight space, who wants to be a media member in the fight space, get on the mat, hit some pads, be in the gym, watch fighters operate because you'll learn so much more. But here's the difference, Robin. When you're talking about the NFL, wins and losses are the only thing that matters, and that's established from day one. That's not the case in the UFC. There's so many more variables are at play in terms of who does what, who gets the opportunity, who gets that chance. Misha Tate's supposed to fight Ronda Rousey for a third time because she won that fight, but she's not getting that fight because, quote-unquote, to speak generally from Dana White, no one cares about that fight. So there's a lot of factors at play. I wish it was the one loss. I wish it was the sporting aspect was the most important aspect. I've said that forever. But the fact is that there are a lot of pro wrestling elements to mixed martial arts, especially the way the UFC operates, the decision making. It's not just about how you perform in the cage, although that matters a lot. In the end, that's the most important thing, I think. But there are other elements that mean a great deal when it comes to decision-making and putting fighters in fights. And I think the coverage will reflect that because that's just the reality of what the sport is.
But when we go out, we believe it's a noble cause to go out and try to push it the other way, that it's pushed too hard that way, and we try to push it the other way. Does that make us bad journalists?
No, I don't think at all. Look, there's a difference in my criticism of what you guys said and my criticism of Fight Network. And initially, and I'll lay down a caveat. I don't watch you guys 24/7. I don't see everything you do. So my criticism comes from, I'll say, a shallow place, but only from what I saw what your conversation was last week. When a media company or reporters go out intentionally trying to serve the people they're covering, and I mean that, like, so you're covering the UFC, you're trying to build the UFC's business, you're not supposed to do that as a reporter.
I don't think we do that.
Okay, and I wanted to be clear on that because that's what it came across. No one should be doing that sort of stuff.
Yeah, well, you saw our chat about Jordan Meehan after, right? It's literally the opposite. Like, we champion the sport, but not the organizations. We are very critical of the UFC.
And we're partners.
Yeah, and we're TV partners. On planet Earth, we're probably the only ones that get away with it, and they probably let us do it because we're authentic and we're passionate. And if we're putting over the sport so passionately, every now and again they can take a jab at their business practices, I think. You know,
as long as you're fair, as long as you're fair, you know, it's just taking a jab for jab's sake is, you know, useless. But if the jab sets up something else, or if the jab leads to an outcome that's, you know, from a reporting perspective, that's beneficial 100%, you don't just take cheap shots. I mean, there has to be some value to the reporting. So, and I saw your report on Jordan Main, and, you know, it was very insightful. And I think that kind of stuff, it serves your reader. And you're going to grow your audience, and you're going to grow the sport by serving the readers. Not only, you know, giving salacious stuff, which people eat up, unfortunately. I didn't watch the VMAs. I can't stand that stuff. So it's like, but a lot of people do. But if you give them the other things as well, the things that mean something, you know, the fight analysis, the really sort of in-depth breaking down of how a guy lands a body shot, a hook to the liver, whatever it is, that's beautiful. And then if you can get to the news and the details of the day and really break them down so people can understand them, I mean, these are our lives. We love this stuff. Yeah. We revel in it. A lot of people have lives to live, and they can only spare 15 minutes to really pay attention. They want to pay attention. So you have to give them invites that are palatable to them, that they can take in, that they can really understand the process and the ideas for the stuff that they're taking in to be beneficial. And I think, you know, you ask what MMA journalism is, it encompasses all those things. It really does. And I love doing journalism in the MMA space because it allows me so many different opportunities to practice journalism in different ways. And the way that I do it doesn't have to be the way that everybody else does it. But I would like to see, you know, continued sort of a real continued effort among the people who are trying to practice journalism in the space to actually do it. You know, you don't have to placate. You don't have to kowtow. You don't have to talk down to people. You can be smart. And people respond to that, and I think that's the most important thing.
He is one of the most insightful characters in mixed martial arts. Josh, thank you so much for the time. Hopefully we can have you on the show again.
Anytime. Thank you.
When we come back to Five Rounds Today, we're going to shit talk Josh Gross. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. John Ramdean and Robin Black just got off the phone with Josh Gross. Great experience. The guy's very insightful, as I mentioned. And it's one of the guys that I listened to, you know, close to a decade ago because of his take on mixed martial arts. And, you know, I think sometimes you talked about it. We get passionate because, you know, we go to the UFC and we're surrounded by mixed martial arts media members, and none of them seem to be on the same page. Any of the guys that we talk to, and you know, there are guys out there, as you mentioned, Luke Thomas, a great individual. But as Josh said, that's because Luke spent time training in martial arts. Josh has spent time training in martial arts, and I think that's a very important element. And I know people may say, well, you guys aren't journalists, and I don't really think that we are.
I don't think we are. In fact, I denounce that.
Right, but at the same time, if you watch Fight Network, we have newsmakers every day. We try to break news when it's around, and you know, we have friends in the sport. We have great friends at the TriStar Academy in Montreal that produces some of the best fighters in mixed martial arts. We know all the UFC guys that are in Toronto, Bellator guys, whatever. So sometimes we get stories that we have to pass along, and I know that, you know, there was that article that Ben Folks wrote talking about us
and Danny Downs
and Danny Downs.
Great
article, and if you get a chance, go back and look at it, because I think we are guilty of, you know, getting over, we're passionate about the sport, but sometimes we overdo it. And I think we have to look objectively, because, you know, not everybody tunes into the sport for the same reasons exactly. that we do. And same with football. Not everybody is interested on all the nuances of the plays. They want to see a quarterback whip that ball down the field, somebody get it, and they want to see somebody
and
break
cheer
out.
And cheer because their team won.
They want to see guys get hammered and this and that. And there are some mixed martial arts fans that are out there that are looking for technical brilliance. As Josh said, when I go see guys train, I'm looking for their foot movement, their footwork, and this and that, and looking for setups and this and that. Whereas some people don't give a shit about that.
And they're not wrong.
They're not wrong. You're right. Because we're in a time now that there's very little time to do a whole bunch of different things. It's like, okay, this is what I want. Do I want two guys to stand in the middle of the cage, and I don't give a shit if their technical abilities are on par with the best fighters in the division.
Chaos.
I just want to see chaos. Yeah. And is that wrong?
No, I guess it's not wrong.
I
don't care why anyone likes fighting. I want them all to like fighting. It's an interesting one because, you know, a friend of mine I was just all worked up. Like, it's like, why is it like this? Why can't we do better? And they were like, well, you should be glad you guys do it different than other people, because then there's you guys. People end up, if they like this, they end up with you. But that's not good enough. We give a shit, maybe too much. Maybe we shouldn't be doing a job where we care so much about it that our wives get angry that we're like spending too much time at work. And maybe it's unhealthy, but it's what we want to do and it's what we're thinking about all the time. And because of that, I think we don't want to just, hey, look, we do something different, come to us. We want to influence the whole thing. We want people to see it differently. We want them not to boo when guys are wrestling, because wrestling is a special sport. We want people to learn about all the technical details, so when they watch the fights, they see the fight. They don't just see the color of the guy's hair versus what he said on Twitter. Yeah. And people will, and I get it.
Some people want that.
I know they do.
That's what they're looking for.
And that is okay. And so maybe rather than get all worked up and be so angry and want the... You know, if everything is about gossip and Twitter, or it feels like it to us, well, we want to put it hard on the other side to draw it back somewhere closer to a healthy balance. You know, if it's so...
Does there have to be balance, though?
Maybe not.
You know, you look at...
I mean, Ben pointed out in the thing that metrics show what people want.
Yeah.
And the metrics say, hey, people seem to react to this. But why? It's so easy. They react because it's easy. People react to...
The low-hanging fruit.
But it's also harder in its own way. It's easier to get the quick one, but it's harder to keep them always, because that quick, easy one can come from any website in the world. And if everybody's thing is the same, and then Danny pointed out that, well, the media does say that Demetrius Johnson's great. They just parrot that you have to watch it.
Yeah.
What they really say is he doesn't sell pay-per-views. The global media. He doesn't sell pay-per-views. Why aren't people like him? That is something that's repeated all the time. And that's an easy story. 15 of them in a row, ask him, and 15 of them in a row, put it out. But what you're going to end up doing as media is fighting the other 15 for your slice of the pie. And that's harder and harder and harder, and you have to get more and more absurd and more obnoxious and more you know, gossipy.
Yeah.
Faster. Oh, he beat his wife. Oh, she said that. That didn't really happen. She's dating a guy. I mean, is this a sport or not? But again, I'm getting myself all worked up. But it's real. I mean, at least this is how we really feel.
And I think one of the reasons why that I look at it is because, you know, if you're in the NFL or if you're in the NBA, you are the top of the basketball or football food chain. Yeah. And that, you know, Demetrius Johnson is recognized by his peers and most martial artists and coaches as the top level guy. Unfortunately, when you put him next to a pretty blonde girl that is 5-1 in mixed martial arts, a lot more people, the casual fans, are more interested in her than Demetrius Johnson, which is very bizarre to me.
You're making their point, and they are right. And that is true. And I'm just thinking about it now as I'm trying to look at it more analytically, which is our real job, is when a guy hits his wife in an elevator. Was that a football player or a basketball player? Do you remember a guy? I don't know. Was it a football player? Yeah, I think so. He hit his wife in an elevator. It was horrific. And that was the bigger story than whatever football games happened that day. So this isn't unique to fighting. Josh Gross is always the voice of reason, and he is right. And I think all we can do is try to do the best job we can. If we really believe this important and we really think people will really give a shit about all this stuff, go as deep as we humanly can and hope to influence the culture when we do it.
When we come back, we will be joined by the UFC 125-pound champion, a guy that we consider to be one of the pound-for-pound best in the world,
and
Demetrius
Johnson. And we're not going to ask him why or how many pay-per-views. We're talking to him about technique.
We might. Don't go anywhere. More of Five Rounds today when we come back. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. John Ramdean and Robin Black with you. And we are joined on the line by one of the pound-for-pound best fighters on planet Earth. He is UFC flyweight champion Demetrius Johnson, who is going to be taking on Jod Dodson in a rematch on September 5th at the MGM Grand Garden Arena in Las Vegas, Nevada, UFC 191. Demetrius, thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Is it difficult during this time to spend your time dealing with the media as well as getting your workouts in as you're preparing for a guy who, you know, things didn't go his way the first time? Now he gets to make some adjustments. He gets to make the amendments to his game, hopefully, in his mind, to be successful this time. How do you try to balance everything to make sure that you're in tip-top shape come fight time?
Well, I'm a professional athlete, and this is nothing new to me. This is going on my seventh title defense. So for me, I've done this rodeo many times before, and I've been successful then, and I'm planning on being successful now. So for me, I'm just staying focused and going out there and go to work.
Hey, Demetrius, we were just looking at how the best have handled rematches. You know, George St. Pierre's two losses, he came back and he destroyed those guys. Cain Velasquez lost to Junior Dos Santos, came back and destroyed him twice. Chris Weidman beats Anderson Silva and then does it even better the next time. You've already had two rematches and had one authoritatively the second time. What is it about a rematch that makes you excited and that allows you to be a different kind of fighter?
Well, I'm able to go back to the first fight and see where I had success and see where he had success, and then basically take away where he's had success and be able to build on where I was getting to him in the fight. With that being said, there's not as much feeling that period. You know, we both know what we bring to the table. He brings the big power, and I bring arsenal of many different tools and the gas tank. And we're going to find out Saturday night who's going to be able to make the right adjustments and execute the game plan.
When this fight is signed, how fast do you and your team, obviously coached by Matt Hume, when do you guys sit down and look at the exact strategy and what you need to do to make sure that you have success in that second fight?
Well, we don't really sit down and look at it and try to build on a strategy. You know, at the end of the day, it's fighting. And, you know, when you're able to fight everywhere in the octagon, whether if it goes in the clinch, on the wrestling, or jiu-jitsu, or stand-up, you don't really have to set a strategic game plan. You know, you go back, you look at the fight and see where he likes to do and see where he's successful, and you just play off that and you just go out there and fight and see what happens. Because, you know, during the fights, I'm known for making adjustments during the rounds or even between...
Mid-round, sorry.
I was looking outside in the car. Mid-round, then I'm able to make those adjustments and see what happens.
You know, we were looking at it, and you know, I'm a huge fan of yours. I love breaking down your work, man. And so I'm watching your work and thinking, if I'm Jod Dodson, what do I got to do? And the answer is a really hard one for him, man. Like, he's not going to win rounds 4 and 5 against you. That's just not going to happen. And he's not going to, you know, it's just not, right? Like, it's just really not. And he's not going to be able to out-finesse you or manage you for 25 minutes. So if I'm him or his coaches, I'm trying to find ways where he can lead you into that power like he did with TJ Dillashaw. So you know that. What do you do to prevent him from trying to lead, trap you down a hallway where he can drill you with a clean one?
Well, you just walk down a hallway and you just dodge out of it. I mean, you know, it's fighting. So to try to avoid certain things, that's not fighting at all. You're negating stuff. And mm-hmm. one of the things I love, one of my coaches tells me, is that whatever you do in this sport, you're always wrong. You're always wrong. You have to make your opponent feel wrong. So if I take a shot, and if he defends the shot, he's going to be wrong. I'll make him pay for defending the shot. Mm-hmm. If I shoot and I succeed with a takedown, he will pay for me succeeding. So that's kind of the mindset I have when I fight, is that whatever my opponents do, they're always going to be wrong. So if they hit me, it's going to be a wrong spot, because as I get hit, I'm going to make sure I'm in the right, put myself in the right position to counter it, or, you know, cross distance or whatever.
That's fucking deep, man. That is brilliant. I love it.
Now, Demetrius, we've always heard over the last number of years, fighters say they're not really concerned with their opponent's game plan. I have to go out and execute the game that I'm comfortable executing. However, we also talked to Firas Sahabi, who is the coach of Rory McDonald, and they said, you know, we were just going to do our thing because we didn't anticipate the growth of Robbie Lawler. Is it important for you to anticipate the growth of your opponent, or do you subscribe to that same theory where you just go out and do your own thing?
You just got to do your own thing. And I think
that's a good thing how, you know, Frosty put it. You know, you used to go out there and do your own thing and not hold back. Like, when you start getting in the camp and you're training and you're game planning for one specific person, it's like, okay, we can't do this to this person. Like, this is the only chance we have to win. You're setting yourself up short. You know, that's why Matt is a huge believer of making sure all his athletes and fighters are well-rounded to where, you know, there's times I've fought and the stand-up was not going my way, or I could not take an opponent down. So I was like, all right, shoot, you're not going to take you down, then I'm just going to get you in a Muay Thai clinch and beat the hell out of you with my knees. you know, you look at the Ali Babatina fight. You know, I've shot multiple times against him, and I was not able to take him down. But I still got my hands on him and got him in the clinch, and I found a different way to get the job done.
Philosophically speaking, sometimes I look at it, and you and Matt, when you have a plan, you're not afraid to go into danger zones. And is it because it's like, fighting's dangerous anyways, let's not be concerned that we're going into a dangerous proposition, because if we do that, we'll make him believe what he's doing is right, and we'll make him wrong again. Is that accurate?
Absolutely. I mean, our fighting policy is getting people's face and put the pressure on them. So with that being said, I am taking a risk of fighting that type of stuff, but the reward is so much better. And since I've been doing it for so long, like, that's how I train. Like, when I hit pads, when I spar in the gym, even when I do other things, when it comes to my swimming workouts, my running workouts, I'm always pushing the pace. So when I do it in an actual life situation, it's something new to me. My body knows how to react. Yes, you're going to get hit. You're going to get dropped. You might, you know, you need to put in a little submission, get out of it. But that's the way we train. And that's how Matt does. When we spar, you know, he'll come forward and I'll hit him with one, I'll crack him with one hard shot. Then after that, it's all, I was wrong for throwing that shot. And he made sure I was. He made sure I paid for it.
Of course, if you're a real fan of mixed martial arts, I think most people appreciate you as one of the pound-for-pound best fighters in the world. You've made a couple of comments about the uneducated fools that consume mixed martial arts. What do we need to do to change their opinion? How can we get them on the same page to appreciate the real talented martial artists that compete in this great sport?
You know, I put that question or the answer to that on the back burner, because that's not one of my biggest things I'm worried about anymore. You know, I saw Robin did something on MMA Junkin on the Ben Folks talking, and I really like what he said about it. So for me right now, I'm not focused on that. I'm not worried about it. I'm tired of, you know, trying to answer that question, because I literally don't know, and I honestly just don't care anymore. It's 2015, like Kanye West said. Right. I'm dead worried about what people like me or not.
Yeah, and hey, man, we'll take care of that. Don't worry about that. We'll take care of that.
Thank you. My job, my two sole purpose job is to fight and make weight. That's all my job is, and I do that pretty fucking well.
Now, has anything changed for you? You think about your time in the WEC and now on the top of the world at 125 pounds. Has your training methods changed? Has your the way that you you look at your nutrition, is that all the same, or is it just been a progression?
It's been a huge progression into a big change. You know, now I have to diet because now I'm fighting, you know, a lower weight class than what I was in WEC. Media obligations have come, you know, way more important. And it just the sport itself has changed, you know, not just me, but the sport itself. With, you know, now the UFC's mainstream, and now we're doing interviews with ESPN, Fox. I mean, it's just a complete 360. But, you know, you progress with the change, and you try to make sure you don't get lost in a loop.
One of the things that we talked to Matt Hume about was the fact that you guys are actual trailblazers. You don't look at some of the trends in mixed martial arts. You create the trends. Is that important for you to be a guy that influences the sport?
Yeah, to influence in the right way, you know. I'm a pretty hard worker, and I like to wear that on my shoulder to people know, like, you know, yes, I'm very talented and I'm an active guy, but I like to work hard for it. Things aren't just given to me or handed to me. I work for it, the skills that I have. And, you know, and the trend I want to put is that, you know, it's not always about knocking your opponent out or doing that. Obviously, that's the goal and the key to do, but sometimes it's not going to happen, especially when you find a guy who's at a high caliber level. Mm-hmm. You know, only time when you see big knockouts, you know, like the Ronda Rousey, the Betch Guerrero, that's when you see a very lopsided fight, to where, you know, you look at Betch Guerrero's last, her record of her opponents she's beat, it's all combined, it's 1 and 7. So what does that tell you?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. That's all I can say about that.
And when we, it's true, man. I mean, if you're fighting the top guys in the world, it's a systematic dismantling that you're doing. But when we did talk to Matt as well, you know, he said we were asking about that, and I was talking about how you can study other fighters and other coaches, look at it, and break it down and change with it. And he said you can't do that. You're just in search of real perfection. And I said, but there's no such thing as perfection in martial arts. And he said, he kind of rolled his eyes like, God, kid, you have a lot to learn. And then kind of said, you know, and then kind of said, yeah, but you have to search for it. And is that, like, philosophically, what make that into layman's terms for us?
Basically, not saying that you're always searching for that. And with that being said, you're searching for it against the best opponent out there. Like, you know, I can go out there and find a guy in the street, and I can show you, you know, perfect mixed martial arts because that person is trained. I'm able to pose my will on him. But to be able to display it in front of thousands of people with all the added, you know, pressures with the media, the lights, what people mm-hmm. think about you. You know, there's money on the line. There's so much.
Consequences.
Consequences on that you got to be able to go and do it. Now, when you're in the gym aspect of it, it's a totally different scenario because you're always learning to be perfect. If knocking a person out was the only thing about mixed martial arts, then I'll spend basically all my time on my feet trying to, and learning the art of knocking people out, but I'm trying to learn the art of just
free fighting.
Fighting. Yeah. It's just fighting, that's it.
UFC 191 goes down September 5th, the 125-pound championship of the world on the line. Demetrius, best of luck against John Dodson. Thanks so much for joining us here on Five Rounds Today.
Thank you, I appreciate it.
When we come back, we are wrapping things up. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. John Ramdean and Robin Black with you. We just got off the line with Demetrius Johnson. He's getting prepared to fight John Dodson in the rematch. And you talked about all the rematches and how the best rise to the occasion. They come back stronger than before. Demetrius Johnson just seems to have a different mindset than a lot of fighters that we've talked to in the past, where really he doesn't give a shit about anything but him, his team, and the people that are close to him, and he knows how to stay on the top of the mountain.
Yeah, and I mean, it kind of ties back into what we've been talking about today and ongoing, is, and even what Josh Gross, our buddy, said. It's like, wouldn't it be nice if it was just about wins and losses and getting in there and talent and technique? Mm-hmm. And that's why we push that way. You know, and that's why guys like that push that way. And he's doing the right thing, man. And we've had this conversation, a slightly separate conversation. If you're out there figuring out what you're going to name your fragrance and what your clothing line looks like and all the acting you're doing and your brand and all that stuff, you're not training as hard as Demetrius Johnson is training. And that's why the best are the best, is because they keep the goal the goal. And when it comes to him, the goal is not just win this fight, but the goal is to be the best fighter in human history.
One of the things, it's difficult for people to understand, especially if you've never been inside of the cage. I've never been in the cage. You've been in the cage. We heard Demetrius talk about the fact that, well, this is a tough sport. You just deal with things. What happens when you can't deal with it? What happens if the punching power of John Dodson, we saw Demetrius get dropped a couple of times. What happens if Dodson's able to capitalize on that? How do you deal with that during the moment?
You just do. I mean, he got dropped before and he could do it. And I do this podcast with David Mullins, a sports psychology consultant, and he said that, you know, and this is true. We all do this. Everyone in life does this. Evidence. We look at the evidence. And the evidence, when you're in there and you're all alone and shit is getting tough, the evidence is every other time that's happened, I could rise to the occasion. And that teaches you and it reinforces you. Guys like Demetrius Johnson, Chris Weidman, even Ronda, they don't understand how mentally strong they are because they don't have anyone else to compare to. They're only them. You know, I did get in the cage, and I'm not those people. I had some performances where I was, my last one, you were there, it was perfect. Like, I could do everything I need to. Other ones where I shit the bed. So I've had the experience of being a normal person, not at that level. And you know how different it is. They don't. They've never had that experience. Demetrius Johnson has always been Demetrius Johnson. And so he doesn't have anyone to compare to. And that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. He goes in there and he's going to win it. And he knows he's going to win.
But, I mean, you look at a guy like our buddy Sam Stout, for example. Throughout his career, he evidence mm-hmm. proved that he mm-hmm. can take a punch in the face. Get to fight this
good
way.
Point.
And then one day, he gets stopped.
Mm-hmm. New evidence.
New evidence. Mm-hmm. Is that what it is? It just becomes – but now you're dealing with a new scenario, a scenario that's you might not have been prepared for.
You can't be prepared for. What is the actual scientific method? The scientific method is you follow all of the evidence and that comes to a conclusion. But those conclusions are not permanent. Over time, you recheck it and you retest it and you reface. So that's why science is science, because the greatest minds in human history have looked for evidence, and when they found it, that's science. And new science pops up later. And even science proving itself wrong just proves that science works. Mm-hmm. Eventually, the scientific method will get you to the truth, and it relies on evidence. The new evidence for Sam Stout, the new evidence he had to react to, and there's other guys, is I can't fight that way. So what do you
do? Pat Cote said that.
Yeah, Pat Cote said that. You're right. Now, when Pat was in round three against
Josh Berkman,
he did get tagged. So what happened? Well, the way to make the moment work for you is the 10 minutes before it, wrestled him, tired him, fatigued him, strained him, so that when Josh Berkman caught him, it was minute 12 Josh Berkman after 12 minutes of a hard fight, not minute one Josh Berkman. You can control things, you can change things, but ultimately in the end, also, as you mentioned, Sam, Sean Tompkins used to tell these guys, well, what's the worst that can happen? I could get knocked out. Can you control that? No.
Right.
So why don't we just fight? And just go in and fight. I mean, you can't control that. You can minimize getting hit. You can put yourself in situations where we try not to let this happen, but one day it will happen to us, and one day it does happen to you. And the world is a scary place, and we all want to do really great things. And if the scary potential outcome of trying those great things is something bad can happen, what are you going to do? Not do it or do it?
Some people say no.
Yeah.
They're not willing to go out and test those waters because of the fear of something bad happening.
Yep. And if you can change that, your life will be better. One day something bad will happen to you. But one day something bad is going to happen to you regardless. And I really believe that you live your life and you live a life of adventure and a life of excitement and a life of passion by going out and taking those risks. And a guy like Demetrius Johnson will take those risks, and so will John Dodson. John Dodson's going in here fighting again. I mean, I am a little bit of too much of a Demetrius fanboy because I admire his skills, mm-hmm. and I try not to let that cloud me, because the truth is John Dodson is one of the best fighters in the world, mm-hmm. and he's coming in there with the belief that he's going to take the belt.
The thing is, you know, Demetrius talked about it. You know, he goes and plays his game, that you can't worry about these certain things. Well, he doesn't have to worry about them because it's a perfect storm. Mm-hmm. A, he's coached by a genius of combat sports. B, he's got certain physical attributes that not everybody in the division has. He has this incredible athletic abilities. You know, John Dodson's just as athletic, maybe as quick. His timing is there. But Demetrius Johnson, there's all these things that you look at that separates him from the pack.
And if he was at a point in his life where John Dodson was better at those things, his growth mentality would be such that he's like, how do I equal and then pass him? The reason he's so good is his physical and technical skills and his coaching, but the drive. Weidman's the same way. Weidman is as good as Weidman is because Weidman is going to outwork everybody else around him. And the reason we go crazy about the greats and the reason we admire fighting and the reason we admire super athletes is because they're different than us. I went and trained as hard as I possibly could to be a fighter, and I could be a passable, not quite a 500 record, bottom level guy with what I had. These guys can do more than that. And when you go and you find that and you sense it and you realize, you got to get in there and really fight and really feel the terror to realize how brave some of these guys are. But one last thought on that is Demetrius Johnson, he said it to us, you can't think about what to avoid. By not having a mentality of stay away from something, he goes in with the belief what he's going to do is going to make it wrong for you, and that's how he's going to win the fight. And if he loses the fight, it doesn't change anything for him. I don't think he will, but he goes right back to the drawing board and tries to be a perfect fighter the next day.
We got to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to finish things up here on Five Rounds Today. Welcome back to the FN Studios. This is Five Rounds Today. I'm John Ramdeen. He's Robin Black. UFC 191 going on this weekend in Las Vegas. Demetrius Johnson, John Dodson, Andrei Arlovsky, Frank Mir, Anthony Johnson. Oh, my gosh. Jimmy Manoa, Paige VanZant, Francisco Rivera, John Lineker. So many fights. Joe Riggs on the card. A very entertaining fighter, Clay Collard, as well. Corey Anderson, Jan Blachowicz. Did I say Anthony Johnson and Jimmy Manoa? Paul Felder and Ross Pearson. Yeah. We know that we're going to be talking all about the main card fights.
Yeah.
This is one fight I want to talk about. Paul Felder, the Irish Dragon. Very, very entertaining. You and I have a feeling he's going to be a star. He's a boy of Donald Cowboy Cerrone. And I'm interested to see how he looks after suffering the first loss of his mixed martial arts career. Yeah. And it's against a good guy in Edson Barbosa.
Yeah. So what I'm interested in, we're fans. We're big fans of his skill and his technique. And coming out of Philly, a lot of people that we've known from there talked about him on his way up. And he's a great fighter. Fun to watch. The big question I have is we haven't got a chance to meet him or talk to him. That's going to be interesting. What's going on in there? Mm-hmm. We see what's going on with this stuff. What's happening in there?
Well, he's traveled. He's looking for the truth of things. I've learned some things here, but I have to spread my wings. I got to go see what's going on in the mixed martial arts realm.
If he said to me, and we've never spoken to him, but if we were talking to him and he said, damn, what I was disappointed in that fight was I didn't go after it. I accepted round three that I was going to lose a decision. If he told me that, I'd be terrified of him. I would be terrified. If he's self-analytical enough to look at it and go, damn it, I should have had that fight. I could have had that fight. It was all here, and I stepped back or pulled back on the reins a little and lost it. If he's analytical enough to see that, because that's what I feel happened, he would terrify me. He'll be a champion. He'll be a lightweight champion of the world because he has everything. Is he able to look at that and say, that was me? I could have won that fight and next time I will? Because if that's the case, he's going to be a terrified.
And I imagine that he's going to be one of those guys because, you know, when you have Donald Cerrone there, he'll probably explain. I mean, not that Felder doesn't needs an explanation, but Donald Cerrone, I'm sure there's times where he said, I didn't pull the trigger.
He's learned,
went to a sports psychologist, and I expect that we're going to see a very different Donald Cerrone when he takes on RDA for the 155-pound championship. That's it for us. Next week, all the fallout from UFC 191 in Sin City, Las Vegas. He's Robin Black. I'm John Ramdeen. Chase is running the board. Thanks for tuning in. We'll catch you next time on Five Rounds Today.